ongoing mission to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life forms and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Buck Benny, a two-fisted, quick-triggered marksman who shoots from the hip and never misses.
Well, hello again. This is Buck Benny speaking. I am still with my friend Matt. Jim and Bob couldn't make it today. We are talking about Lower Decks, the season finale. The other thing I want to mention about the season finale is that I just found this just right before we got on the air. Over on YouTube, there is a panel that was just done with the Lower Decks team and Will Wheaton, kind of as a virtual ready. He does the ready room where he talks about Star Trek, and it's a sort of a convention-based episode of the ready room where they focus on both Lower Decks and Discovery, the two shows we talk about. I think I'm going to take, and right after we're done talking, immediately it'll go into part of that panel that I'll bring across. And so you can hear part of that. But if you want to hear the whole panel, go search out. I think if you typed in Lower Decks Discovery Will Wheaton panel or something, you'd find a ready room panel, you'd find it. But I just thought that would be a nice tie-in because they do talk about the Will at the very beginning, Will Wheaton mentions they had just dropped the season finale, so it must have been that ready room was dropped because the finale just came out on Thursday, so it was like probably the ready rooms from Friday yesterday, and today is Saturday that we're talking about the finale of Lower Decks, so that'll be cool to hear the actors talk about it too. Anyway, Matt and I were talking earlier about this, and this is, again, probably one of the best episodes of the series. I remember the panel I played before for you of the actors said that episode 3, which we've always pointed out is one of our absolute favorite episodes, and the final 2 or 3 episodes at the end of the season are they thought were the very best. And we're pretty much in agreement with them. We have really enjoyed these last number of weeks, and this is no exception. So let's go, and we're gonna spoil the heck out of this thing. So make sure you watch the episode before you listen to this. If you haven't watched the episode, go watch it. Come back and listen to us chat about the episode. Matt, over to you. One, you can give me any impressions you have of the episode, or you can go through and do a little summary of the episode, whatever you want to do. So you're good.
Yeah, like you said, this was... this is probably my favorite episode of the series so far. And just like we've talked about with Discovery, back to back, these 2 weeks have been the two best episodes to me of the series by far. Last week's kind of movie extravaganza. Yeah. Hey, let's not parody Star Trek TV shows for a week. Let's do the movies. Super enjoyable just seeing all the kind of call outs to previous films. And again, this is one of those episodes that there's enough callbacks in it that are like, oh, well, now I've got to go watch that original series episode. I remembered the planet. I remembered, you know, certain things about that particular episode that they start. This one starts off with a callback to the Return of the Archons episode of the original series, and they deal with some of the implications of last week, Boimler finding out that that Mariner is the captain's daughter, and they kind of, that's the kind of part of the heart of the episode is kind of that being made public and some of the implications for the characters. and Mariner trying to decide what that means for her going forward with her career, and how they're going to...
And everybody to, approaching her on trying to get in her good graces so they get in the captain's
right, all good this, graces. All the reasons she didn't want people to know that she's the captain's daughter come... I mean, her worst fears of that play out. And
yes.
And it's kind of changing Boimler's character a little bit too, or his reaction to her, not in the same kind of way that he's trying to suck up to her. They're still peers and friends and whatnot, but it just... He feels like he's got a little protection now that, you know, his best friend is the captain's daughter. So, no, there's so many great parts in this episode as far as, you know, references. The guy that... there's one throwaway character that's like a total conspiracy theorist that, you know, screaming Wolf 359 was an inside job. Things yeah. like that. And like, that's such a great little, so
well, what like was that. Just for our, cause we, I know what it was immediately when they said Wolf 359, I think you do too. So what was the reference for Wolf 359?
So that was the battle. That was the big Borg fight in The Next Generation. Which this is set shortly after that timeline. So it's the
Borg battle at the... am I correct? It's the second part of Best of Both Worlds that yes. 359 piece happens, and they're taking on the Federation and stomping the heck out of them until the crew of the Enterprise, of course, deals with it quite neatly at the end of the episode, as we would expect.
Correct. But
it's a great callback to that, and saying that's all a conspiracy and so forth. That was
right, because that would have been, you know, that would have been such a traumatic moment for the entire Federation, having, you know, the heart of your fleet destroyed right. in one huge battle. And and I don't know how much is made public after that to, you know, the commoner in the Federation that, oh yeah, by the way, the captain of your flagship was somehow involved in on the other side.
Yeah. Yes.
So that little call out, just like I said, they do so much in the show that's fun like that. There's like, and you don't have to have that deep a Star Trek knowledge to appreciate the show for what it is.
Correct.
Certainly my daughter's been enjoying it without having seen a single episode of Next Generation. Mm-hmm. She's familiar with some of the characters from different things, but you know, for the most part, once in a while we'll stop and say, oh, this is from that or whatever. But if it's important enough to understand the episode, but very rarely is there anything that... usually it's just you might miss a joke or two, but you're certainly not going to not enjoy or be able to follow the show without the background. But then that background is there. It kind of reminds me a little bit of the old Looney Tunes cartoons that you watch them as a kid and they're funny, and then you see them again as an adult and you see so many references to pop culture from the time or whatever that, oh, I understand that now as a joke.
And classical music and all of that. Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's funny on a different level when you're an adult. You see a lot of humor in the background that you said it didn't stop you from enjoying it, not knowing that stuff, but it just heightens your enjoyment of it. But I think both these last two episodes had a ton of that kind of stuff in it.
Right. And that's what makes them especially enjoyable to us. I agree with you. I think initially, probably all the way up until these last two episodes, I would have said episode three was my favorite, but I would say these two episodes beat it. And a few episodes prior to that are close to on the level of at least tying episode three. So what a great way to end out the series for the first season, to make it where when they come up with a second season, I am no doubt going to watch the second season and be excited about when it comes out. So kudos to them. Cause as we started this thing, if you go back and listen to our first podcasts on it, we were really questionable in the first two episodes, whether we were going to stick with it or not, whether it was adult enough for us and all that kind of stuff. And we really everybody has kind of fallen in love with this show as we've gone along, which is fantastic. What else on the show did you get into or on this episode?
Oh, well, towards the end, there's a classic cameo.
Yes.
That was...
And I think, well, I'm going to go ahead and burn the cameo. And so spoilers again, guys, do not listen to this section if you have not watched the episode. Huge spoiler here. Riker shows up on, and why I want to talk about it is more than just Riker. If you go back and you listen to all these podcasts, we are constantly sort of trying to figure out where the time frame is of this episode, I mean, of this show. And we apparently had it wrong. I mean, somewhat wrong, because we kind of pegged it as, certainly we saw there was uniforms and things in earlier episodes and callbacks to Deep Space Nine era uniforms. And of course, Deep Space Nine was being produced at the same time as the last seasons of Next Gen. So I was kind of thinking it probably took place right at the last episodes of Next Gen. Data and all the crew would still be together in Star Trek and that sort of thing. But this
there are episode, things they talk about that are certainly that certainly make it sound like some of those episodes from Next Gen were very recent.
Right. But they must have been a few years ago.
This just happened on the Enterprise.
Yes. Do we know when this is Riker with Troy that shows up as well on the Titan, right? Is their ship? Am I right with that? Yeah.
Yes.
And we know that, but I don't know the timeline for when they get that ship, but it would appear like it must be after the Next Gen movies, even, right? And so to me, it would take place
because because
in the Next Gen movies, they're both still serving on the Enterprise. It's not like they've come over from the Titan to temporarily serve on the Enterprise, right? So it'd have to be after, I think Nemesis was the last movie, wasn't it? So it'd have to be after that. It's certainly the way they're drawn and everything looks like it's far before the Picard series. So I would say it's probably taking place right after the last Star Trek Next Generation film, which was Nemesis, and that this must be right. I mean, soon after he became captain of the Titan. So he's on the Titan along with Troy, and they feature him. It's not just a quick cameo. It's like he's on here for a little bit of time. He has a few scenes and stuff. And he does. I thought both he and Troy did a nice job of being on this, and I'd like to see them more. What did you think about their appearances, and is there other things that you want to point out about that?
I got super excited, honestly, yeah. When I saw that. My daughter took us, like, it's Riker. And my daughter's like, who? I was pretty stoked to see a major cameo like that in this kind of little series. It was fun because, you know, Boimler obviously has idolized the Enterprise crew. You know, he's always like fanboying on the crew of the Enterprise. And so, yeah, having him have a chance to meet and then, yeah, make a good favorable impression on, you know, Will Riker was a fun moment for him. And and seeing the actors come back, yeah, that's always cool.
Very cool. And I watched it today. I mean, yeah, today at like 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning, I was watching this thing. So I'm trying to keep in my brain because I was like half falling asleep, half watching it, you know, and enjoying it for sure. But Boimler ends up getting onto the crew of the Titan, correct?
Yes.
And I think as we leave the episode, he's still on the crew of the Titan. I mean, the Titan like flies away and he's on the ship. Am I correct?
Yes.
So that's kind of the cliffhanger or story carryover into the next season is.
Yeah, certainly they set up the cliffhanger for the next season. And so that's certainly.
Yeah, is he going to be off the series? Is it going to follow him on that ship and her on the other ship? I mean, I would assume in the first episode of the following series, they're going to get back together somehow. But
I feel like he has to come back to the Cerritos. So
that's what I feel like. Yeah. Yeah. But what's awesome is it sets it up that I don't know how he's going to do that without ideally Riker and Troy appearing yet again in the season opener because he's on their ship. So
yeah, and that was exactly my thought as well. Like, well, they're and the ship is coming back. I mean, maybe you don't see them as much, but I mean, it's voice acting, and it's certainly they could have. Recorded their line. I'm sure the writers know the general direction they're going, and they certainly could have had them record lines for another appearance.
Correct.
All at the same time. So yeah, hopefully we get at least a little bit more of them.
Yes.
Down the road. But yeah, I feel like it'd be interesting if they left it for even a couple of episodes of the next season where they're cutting back and forth between the two. And
right.
But I feel like they'll probably pretty quickly get him back to the Cerritos. And
right.
But it was certainly fun to see.
Well, and I'll tell you this, in all reality, I mean, this is just one of those Star Trek fan fantasy things, but the acting voices on Next Gen are so good, all those actors. Oh, I would love to see a spinoff series that maybe could take place before this that would actually be the Next Gen cast. I mean, can you imagine the further adventures of Next Gen with Data there and Riker and Troy and Picard ideally? But even if Picard said, no, Patrick Stewart's like, no, I've got Picard I'm doing and I don't want to do a,
I'm Sir Patrick freaking Stewart. I'm not going to do your cartoon show.
Yeah, but you can certainly see that they could probably have an easy time. I mean, the actors have made it clear in panels they've been on and everything that they would love to come back and reprise their characters. So I would think it'd be very simple to get a Riker-led, where Riker's the captain, and it has, you know, Michael Dorn as Worf, and it has maybe Brent Spiner is Data. Now, Brent has said after the Picard series, he was done with the Data character and wasn't going to do it anymore. But that wouldn't mean if you offered him a role in a cartoon where he's doing the voice that they wouldn't do that. But I mean, it's never going to happen, but man, it would be fun. And this gives you a taste of it. You just go, oh man, I'd love to follow the adventures of Riker and Troy, at least on this other ship. But do you feel that too, or would you watch something like that, or what do you think?
I would at least give it a shot, and it depends. I mean, I don't know. It'd be interesting to see for sure. And it was funny because when you were talking about it, it reminded me of something from earlier in the episode. Because I was immediately picturing when you were talking about continuing the series in a cartoon format, which is exactly what they did with the original series.
Yes.
They basically, it's cheaper to do animation. Let's do animation.
Right.
And did some episodes of animated with the characters.
And in that case, it wasn't due to age at all. It was just due to, like you say, inexpensive way to do it. And because the actors, of course, in 1973, when it came out, could have reprised the roles in real life and it would have been fine. In the case that we have now, it would make, you'd be really pushing credibility to get all these characters back together on a ship together. I mean, certainly the Picard series can bring them all back together in various ways where he bumps into them or goes to talk to an old friend or whatever it is. But having them play younger versions of themselves in animated form could be a very viable thing that they could do. If
but at one point, I'm totally blanking on the first officer's name. He pulls up his data pad and his Ransom. When Ransom pulls out his data pad, is talking about Kirk. They show a picture of the Enterprise, the original Enterprise crew, and it's taken from the animated series because, of course, that's how that fits into.
I noticed the same thing. I was like, "Oh, that's a cool callback to the animated series to actually use what looks like a frame from that series or recreated to look like that." Yeah, I thought that was great.
And the other little fan service thing that they did right at that in that same scene was when he mentions he talks about the timeline as TOS.
Yes,
and I can't remember what his acronym stood for. Like that old stuff or something.
Yeah, right. Which was because of course TOS means the original series for all the fans, and to call it TOS, of course they'd have to come up with something else because they're not. It's not that meta that they're saying that. Yes,
they're not that fourth wall breaking self-referential to say that. Well, we're in a different series than they are.
Yeah. So, but it was cute the way they did that. I like that too. I mean, there's so much of these shows that is fun for, because most of us that we've talked, we're like the ultimate sort of geeky fan. I mean, we do not like dress up and things like other folks sometimes do, but we like all of the series and all of the different permutations, whereas a lot of people hate this and that and the next thing, depending on the series. We all like Orville as well. And there's a lot of this series that has the flavor of Orville, where it's sometimes tongue in cheek, sometimes it's there's comedy thrown in, of course. They're still trying to get storylines across. I mean, I guess of all the kind of Star Trek-y series, I would say this one is the most similar to the combination of Next Gen and Orville synthesized together to make a Trek series that is animated, right? Whereas Orville is kind of, it's kind of interesting because Orville is kind of the same thing in real life. It is a series that is Next Gen like. They're really trying for the Next Gen feel in Orville. So I think chances are most people that like Orville would probably like this cartoon. And most people that like this cartoon, Lower Decks, would also like Orville, I would think. What are your thoughts on that? We never really talked about the two compared to each other.
No, I totally agree that, I mean, they definitely both include, I mean, in Lower Decks to a far higher degree, but include humor in the series. And I think we might have talked about this in our first conversation about Lower Decks on the show, that Lower Decks is way more what I thought Orville was going to be. And I think maybe what Orville thought it was going to be at first.
Agreed.
And then the writers realized, hey, we can not play as much comedy. We can still be funny. We can have funny people doing serious things.
Yes.
Which made the show much stronger. Yes. Because they were telling good science fiction stories, but with a lot of humor infused into them.
Well, and I think the quote or paraphrasing McFarlane about it was that you can't in an hour format have a spoof every week. It's not going to work. It won't hold up. So he said you have to basically do a serious show that takes on serious science fiction topics and things, but with, like you say, a humorous cast and in ways where you can kind of poke fun at things too. Whereas the Lower Decks is pretty much a more straight on comedy because it's only it's only 20 minutes long, right? Or whatever. But with some serious storylines thrown in there, but a lot of it played for more of the comedy. So I agree. It seems like what Orville might have thought it was going to be at the beginning, but realized they couldn't do it in that format. To me, if I didn't know anything better and someone was to tell me that McFarlane did this as well as Orville, and this was his other take that was like what Orville was maybe going to be at the beginning, but he realized an hour was too long and this would work, that wouldn't surprise me. I would have said, oh yeah, this makes total sense that it would be a sister show to Orville. But of course it's not. That's, yeah. Anyway, anything else on that, Matt?
No.
Okay. Well, we talked about the series overall. I mean, I guess that's a good stopping point, unless there's anything else you want to say about this episode or any of the episodes that, like last week's. I will say this. Let's talk about last week's a little bit, because you weren't here to talk about it. What were some of the highlights for you from last week's episode that was the homage to the movies?
My absolute favorite moment was the reveal of the ship, like the beauty shot of the ship as they are, you know, they've reassembled the crew. They had their first kind of, the first scene where they're like on vacation or something. I mean, like that felt so like, okay, it's time for us to get the crew back together. And we're going to go to the newly refitted Enterprise / Cerritos. And they head to the Cerritos, and the shot, you know, they see, oh, here she is, isn't she beautiful? And then they fly around and around, and there's different angles and lighting and back to the characters, and one of them's crying a little bit. And it was like those moments of nostalgia, like, you know, the first movie of each generation where, you know, they've reassembled the crew and they're, you know, trying to play the feelings of nostalgia up for the show that you used to love, that they're right. All the characters are back together from. And it was one of those perfect jokes. And I remember years ago, the Simpsons writers talking about this in certain episodes. There would be a joke that is funny, and then they play it, you take it too long and it becomes not funny.
Yes.
But then you take it even longer and it becomes hysterical. And to me, that's what this was. It's like, oh, it's funny. There's the beauty shot of the ship as they're coming in. Oh, they're still doing it and doing it and do it. And then
the crazy spiral at the end that just takes it over the top was
so right. Crazy. It was, and the, yeah, they did. They absolutely, I thought that was the perfect description of that, where it's like, okay, it went too long. It's not funny anymore. It's still going. Okay, now it's really funny.
Yeah.
So that was great. And then a couple other things that I noticed that were very movie-esque were the over-exaggerated warp effects and things like that. You always see that in the movie. Like,
yes.
The ship looks so much better going to warp in a movie because they have more budget for special effects. Like,
and my comment to that was simply that in the actual movie, which is done in 79, after Star Wars came out in 77, they decided, oh yeah, we got our own, we got Star Trek, we can bring that up, was that they actually did look at the hyperspeed effect in the Star Wars and say, okay, how can we do something like that when we go to warp to add more interest to it? Of course, because we've never seen anything like that in the series when they went to warp, but no, they needed to do their take on it. And Bob showed up. So, hey, Bob, how's it going, man? You're muted, but you can stay muted if you like, and just to be in the background, it's all good. But
can you read my lips while I say what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. Well, and you showed up. We're talking about Lower Decks. We are in talking about the episode you and I watched. Actually, we talked about the. Most recent of the series finale first. We'll go back to that since you're here. But then since Matt wasn't here to talk about the episode before that, the homage to the movies, to the Star Trek movies, we're talking about that. Before we get into Bob talking about the season finale, let's continue with Matt and I talking a little bit, and Bob can jump in too, about the episode before the homage to the movies. Matt, I thought you said there was a couple things or something else you want to talk about with that. Is go ahead. Is there anything else about that episode?
Oh, those were the two things that jumped out the most as far as like, oh, that's so a movie moment or whatever.
Yes. How about the Khan stuff? The take on, Khan and what's her name? What's the main character's name again?
Mariner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mariner's take on being Khan essentially and the rest of the crew sort of being her henchmen and everything. What do you think of that?
That was fun. I enjoyed Tendi's little bit of it was sort of Mariner's subtle racism against her people as far as like, oh, she's it's not Andorian. What is she? She's one of the other major races.
She's not, I don't even know what she is. She's not an Orion slave girl or anything. Is that the race she's from?
she's an Orion. So she's kind of like just assuming, oh, well then you're the slaver pirate henchman. And she's like some of the line where she says some of us have not been pirates for as much as 5 years.
That's a great line.
That was a terrific line. I just like that whole little, you know, just the kind of like that's why I'm in Starfleet. But it was good in the midst of, you know, being a totally over the top silly,
yes,
kind of episode. I thought that was fun. But I'm trying to. Oh, the other great line I thought was when they are. He's like, oh, yeah, I did this, and this with the transporter and saved everybody. It's like, you can't do that. Oh, it's a movie. You can do all sorts of crazy things with transporters. Like, that is 100% true.
Yes. Well, that's so cool when they can get a little meta like that is just so much fun. I just think that's great. And since we're talking about, I thought I'd do my best bit of being an Orion pirate now. So
fantastic.
It's a little spot on, but Bob, we'd already talked about that episode quite a bit last week, right? Was there anything else? Matt was pointing out the ship, spiraling on the ship. Matt did point out what we hadn't talked about much last week was the gathering of the crew, which is always a main, a trope of the film franchise, that they're gathering the crew back together. And they did that during that episode as well. Did that strike you when they were gathering the crew that was a callback to the movies as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think I didn't note it, but yeah, that it was always, you know, like after the ship crashed, they always get back together.
Yes. Which
was, and the ship crashing, like it was a homage to Search for Spock, I think.
Yes, yes.
Because I remember that distinctly when the ship burns up in the atmosphere.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that was another one I was going to mention was, there's actually two references in both these episodes to that kind of concept, because in the movie episode, of course, the ship crashes, and I feel like that's happened several times. Like you get a new Enterprise, you get a new ship, and it's destroyed. Maybe not at the end of that movie, but certainly by the next one, right. it's going to be, because one, it's, you know, crashing part of a starship into a planet is super dramatic and makes a great set piece. And then two, you get to design your art group gets to design a new ship.
Yes.
So of course you want to blow them up as much as possible because you get to make new stuff and you get to have an exciting scene of a ship being destroyed. Then in this latest episode, at some point she talks about the captain is looking at the Cerritos is getting refit, and she's like, I want it to look just like my old ship. I don't want these, you know, I don't remember specifically which ship she references, but she says, I don't want any of this fancy whatever.
Yes.
Like, I want it to look just like my old ship.
Yes. Which is great. I mean, because then they can do the same ship. And of course, it's even cheaper in animation to change your ship what it looks like entirely. But no, that's nice that they keep on going back to the same one. Bob, let's talk about what you thought of, did you see the season finale?
No, I didn't.
Okay, so let's talk about what you thought about that. Well, actually, this is good you joined us when you did then, because you won't get any spoilers. This is awesome. So, yeah, let's talk about that next week a little bit more when you actually see it, and we'll go there.
Did Matt see it? Did you watch it, Matt?
Yeah, he watched it. I did. He and I have chatted about it, but we don't want to give – there's almost no way to talk about it without a ton of spoilers for you, Bob. So we won't even go into it. Matt and I already did. So what we'll do instead, we will change gears. Well, I'll tell you what. Before we change gears, let's see what I'm going to do. I know. I'm going to stop this, and we will start something new. So thanks, everybody. I hope you enjoyed this last episode of Lower Decks. And remember to stay tuned for part of the panel that I'm going to play right after this with Will Wheaton and the cast of Lower Decks to talk about this season finale and probably where it's going to go in the future. And we will see you guys next time. We might do another episode of the, I don't know. We'll see. We'll see you guys next week and figure out what we're doing.
Hey nerds, I'm Will Wheaton, and this is The Ready Room, your official behind-the-scenes hub for all things Star Trek Universe. This week, we are going Warp Factor 10 on the Season 1 finale of Star Trek Lower Decks, and we have got so much fun stuff planned for you. Of course, as always, we will be getting deep into spoiler territory, so if you haven't watched Episode 10, No Small Parts, you should definitely go watch that first before you watch this. But hurry back, because here in The Ready Room, we've eliminated buffer time. Now today we have a packed house, or maybe a virtual observation lounge is what we should call it. I have decided that my game room is now the virtual observation lounge on my virtual Cerritos. I will be talking to the entire voice cast of Star Trek Lower Decks, as well as the series' own Starship Captain Mike McMahon. There may even be a surprise or two. We have so much going on today, you guys. Then, a little later, we have a very exciting update on Season 2 of Star Trek Lower Decks, which is already underway. But before we get to any of that, we have prepared a very special behind-the-scenes look at the Lower Decks season finale, featuring Mike McMahon. Let's see what he has to say. Control room, engage.
A lot happens in the finale of Lower Decks Season 1. First, the crew of the Cerritos learns that Mariner is related to Captain Freeman.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, come on, Mariner. The captain's your mom.
Shut the f*** up right now, Boimler. Shut your f*** mouth.
Then we find out that the Pakleds, a race of aliens who used to be sort of a joke, have quietly been amassing power and are now starting to be a bit of a danger.
We thought you were the Enterprise.
Pakleds?
We decided to use the Pakleds as our big bads in the finale of this season of Lower Decks because everything on Lower Decks is really a celebration of Star Trek. And my favorite parts of it are when we are referencing and reflecting on things that have kind of already happened in Star Trek. Now, it was really important to us that we didn't do anything that had any kind of earth-shattering canon repercussions. So an area we really like to play with is going back to aliens and locations from standalone episodes of Star Trek and doing sort of a where are they now?
I thought they were kind of a joke.
I'm detecting weapons from over 30 different species.
Looks like they're not a joke anymore.
The Cerritos gets into a bit of a tangle and it seems like all is lost when Riker shows up on the Titan to save the day.
A Pakled party and I wasn't invited?
I knew for sure that we wanted to have Riker and Troi show up in the finale. And I'm just such a big TNG fan, and I knew that the most organic way to have those two interact with the Cerritos crew would be if they needed help from the Titan. So I had already met Jonathan, and he had already said, you know, if we ever needed him to be on the show and reprise Riker, he would be happy to.
You know Riker?
Yeah, who do you think hooks me up with all my contraband?
We couldn't have Riker without Troi, and we absolutely wanted to have Marina on, and we had a blast recording each of them.
Talgana 4. You know, they have a little Risa.
Oh, so then should we take the little Horgan?
When Riker was on screen and when we were recording him, I remember so many people were fighting over who would get to come to the record, and finally we had to be like, guys, not everybody gets to come and geek out. That's what Star Trek Vegas is for.
Give me warp in the factor of
5, 6, 7, 8.
So in an action-packed episode with a lot of comedy, we end up with a lot of question marks. And yeah, just a lot going on in a really great episode.
Oh,
Please join me in welcoming the series' own Lower Deckers, Tawny Newsome, Jack Quaid, and Eugene Cordero, as well as the Bridge Crew voice cast, Don Lewis, Jerry O'Connell, Fred Tatchior, and Jillian Vigman. And last but certainly not least, Lower Deck showrunner, executive producer, and creator, Mike McMahon. That's so many names. And Fred, I said your name wrong. It's Tatashore. Thank you. Thanks for hopping on with me, guys. Before we dive in, I want to address the Orion in the room, which is that we are missing our very dear friend Noelle Wells today. But she did want to give us this message for us in the Ready Room and for you folks at home to wish us all well. Noelle, take it away.
Hey guys, I am sorry that I couldn't be there today. I know that it seems weird since we're all in video, but I promise I'm there in spirit. And if you guys want, you can just like freeze frame a picture of me and put me in the corner and I'll like be there the whole time. So here, I'm just gonna freeze it. Maybe I'll like do a couple different faces. All right. Have a good panel.
Thanks, Noelle. It's awesome to see you. Mike, let's get started. We talked at the very beginning of season one, right after episode one dropped. And here we are, right after the finale. And I'm wondering if you would like to talk about what you might feel most proud of this season. And how does it feel to hit this milestone of putting the first season out? It's all done. It's in the rearview mirror now.
Yeah, I think that the thing that I'm most proud of is when we started writing the show and you know, from the very get-go, we knew that we wanted to do a show that felt very Star Trek, but also focused on the Lower Decks, obviously. Like it's in the title, it's all the promos are very clearly like, this is a show that shows you a different side of what you might know about Starfleet. But now that the whole season is out there, I think that people can see that what we really learned while we were making it is that you can't tell stories about the Lower Decks without really getting to know the bridge crew, the ship, and everything that kind of comes with the comforts of a show that has Starfleet in it. And what I didn't realize is how much I was going to love kind of like the home base family feeling of the Cerritos. And I think that when you see the final episode, you know, the first season has really clicked into place who everybody is and kind of what we love about these characters. And I'm just really proud of not only the comedy we made, but also the Star Trek show we made.
Tawny and Don, I absolutely adore your characters and I adore the relationship between them. In the finale, the Cerritos crew finally finds out that Mariner and Freeman are mother and daughter. Would you talk a little bit about that dynamic and how it progressed over the season? And how do you think this particular revelation is going to continue to affect the rest of the crew and the Lower Deckers?
My captain, please take it.
I was gonna say the same to you. Thank you, my child. Tawny and I only got to work in the studio together a couple of times because we were both, I was on the East Coast, she was here working. But the times we got to be in the studio, and I'm so glad we got to do that one scene with both of us in the same place where, I think it's episode 4, where we're going at each other with like the rock. Is it the right rock?
Look, I'm just saying, I think you should use the shale over there.
Mom, it is the same thing. Just leave me alone.
It's just maybe you'd want one with more of a point.
Oh my God.
Like any mother and daughter, their relationship is like a head-on collision. I feel like I'm the preacher and she's the preacher kid. You know, the preacher's the worst kid in the church. You know, the preacher's trying to get them to behave and love the Lord, and all they want to do is go out back and smoke and kiss boys and cause all kind of trouble. But we deep down really care for each other, respect each other as we learn and appreciate each other's talents and abilities. But it doesn't stop that little, oh gosh, why are the rumors true that you are the worst, worst person in Starfleet? Why?
I think it's interesting to see, you know, someone in Starfleet who cares about the ideals of Starfleet but isn't obsessed with rank and actively, you know, kind of tries to stay away from it because, you know, both of her parents have achieved great ranks and are, you know, Carol's a good captain. She may not be the best captain, but Carol's a good captain.
You just call me Carol.
I'm just saying. I'm so sorry. I actually only call her Madam Her Highness Dawn Lewis. That's all I'm allowed to call her. That's correct.
I think that's appropriate, that's honestly, actually, for all of us.
That goes for the whole Zoom. Yeah, but so I'm sure as a mother to see your kid who is talented in the skills that the job takes, but has none of the desire to do what you did, which is rise up in rank, command a crew, like someone who just wants to use her skills in a really like kind of limited capacity, has to be so frustrating. And so watching that play out over the season, I mean, I love watching the fans who aren't sure who knows, like throughout as the episodes would air, I would notice fans like be like, okay, well, does Ransom know or does Boimler know? And so by the 10th episode, the fact that it's this big reveal for the whole crew is like my favorite because now she suddenly gets treated differently. Yeah.
Jack, I want to talk a little bit about Boimler. Over the course of this season, it turns out that I heavily identify with him. I heavily identify with what a nerd he is. I identify with how he wants to just do the right thing all the time, and he wants to be the best Starfleet officer he can be. And ultimately, that pays off. He gets a promotion, and he transfers to the Titan at the end of this episode. But it's also bittersweet for us who love the show, because he's leaving his friends on the Cerritos. What is going on in Boimler's head at this moment? Is he feeling that bittersweetness, or what is his point of view on that?
I think that's in the back of his mind, but right now he's just so caught up in the excitement. Like, his hero literally flew out of space to A, save the Cerritos, B, he got to meet Riker, which is insane, and C, he gets to work with him on his ship. Like, that's his dream come true. So right now, I think he's a little too distracted. I don't know, Mike, maybe later he starts to, I'm sure he'll start to miss his friends a great deal. But right now, I think he's just kind of basking in all of this.
Jack.
Later he was, come on, Mike, make Boimler a good guy.
He's a good guy.
No,
I think Boimler really leaves. Boimler doesn't actually leave. We're going to find that out in season 2. Sorry. Yeah.
He's gone. Boimler's gone, baby. I mean, Jack, Boimler wanted that all season. How could he not jump at it?
No, he had to jump at it. I think he's so excited to jump at it. I think in the back of his mind, he's like when he finds out that Mariner is calling him, I think there's a little part of him that's like, oh man, I did kind of leave everybody behind. But oh my God, this is so exciting. Riker, the Titan. Oh my God. Yeah, that's his dream, man. You got to let a man do his thing.
Fred, I am thrilled that you are here. You are a legendary voice actor. When I look at your credits, I get tired. It is sensational. And what an honor to talk to you, and what a privilege to have you as part of Star Trek. This finale saw the unfortunate, really untimely death of Lieutenant Shax, but he went out in such a glorious blaze of glorious glory.
The bear has met his light. Yeah, no, it's it really, no, it's really, it's just, that's exactly what he wanted. He lived as he died, in conflict.
He is so Bajoran, and I'm a fan of Deep Space Nine, which I think is the best example of Bajorans on Star Trek. So you said you're a fan of that as well. I was going to ask you, like, did you do that kind of work? Because it's pitch perfect. And I was just wondering what kind of homework you did.
Thank you. I'm a big Trek fan. I'm a big Trekkie and a big fan. So yeah, you try to do the research and try to, he's got the chip on his shoulder. You know, he's got the, let's fight. Let's not let tyranny rule. You know,
so yeah,
that's his thing. And he just gets so apoplectic. He gets so distraught. And then to the point where, like, I can't use this technology anymore. You know, like, I'm tired of this. Destroy the warp core, damn it. You know, I just love how angry he gets. But yeah, but he's got a good heart.
We know that there are few things in the universe that are as impermanent as death is in the Star Trek universe. But I am wondering how it felt for you as an actor and fan when you saw that you were like making the ultimate sacrifice. And do you think that this was going to be permanent, or is this like a Star Trek death wink?
I leave that to my friend Mike over there to explain all of that. But for me, again, it was I can't tell you how many times my characters die in things. I have died so many times. That's really it. Yeah, that's my job, is to die. This is one of those where it was like, when you get that in a character, what a great character to have played, and what a great scene for it to happen. So it's kind of, from a theatrical point of view, it's awesome. From a viewpoint of view where I want to stay in and all that, yeah, it's sad. You know, you don't want to go, you don't want to leave. But it was just such a thrill to play out this guy and to his inevitable end. I mean, even when he was blowing up the ship, he still had somebody in a headlock, I think.
He went down, kicking ass.
Hang in there, baby bear! No! There we go.
Not only blowing up the ship, but he's actually still fighting someone in the explosion, like that wasn't enough.
And cackling.
I vote Shax for the new Kai. Do we need a what's the timeline doing right now? Do we have a Kai currently? How does that work?
Gotta update the Kai. Well, you know, I'll have to talk to the Star Trek folks. There's like all these Kai people that you have to go through all these Kai for hoops, sure, with Bajoran stuff. Like we'll get talking.
Okay. I got so choked up when Shax called him Baby Bear. When he's called Rutherford Baby Bear, that just like melted me. I'll admit that was
Jack. Me too. I gotta say, me too. I was very glad that was part of the deal. Yeah.
Yeah, I loved that. That was wonderful. And Eugene, I actually want to talk a little bit with you, and I want to talk a little bit about Rutherford right now. So Shax kind of saves Rutherford's life on this particular away mission. And in the process, Rutherford loses his memory. But it looks like he's already on his way to getting it back. So a couple of questions. First, do you think he will honor Shax's memory as a former bear? And second, what was your reaction to the intense Rutherfordness of it all in the finale?
I mean, I thought it was amazing. I love the finale. And I feel like, maybe going into next season, you know, there'll be a Shax setting on Rutherford's implant.
Are you pitching that we can tap your way into Shax?
I'm pitching that might be a possibility, but I was also told by Mike that,
give me the app, damn it.
There's a Shax app in the.
Don't work.
But I would love that. So I think he's going to be honored, and you know, as far as the memories are concerned. But I was also told by Mike that I don't have to be there for season two because they're just going to use my audio from season one, since Rutherford doesn't remember anything.
Animation trick.
Reuse the animation track.
Yeah.
Mr. Jerry O'Connell, I have known you longer than most of the people on this panel have existed in this world. We first met in 1985. We worked together in Stand By Me. I love so much that you are now part of my Star Trek family. I love this. I love that your wife is a member of our Star Trek family. Like, I'm crazy about it. I'm so excited for it. My question for you is, what is it like for you playing this bridge character, this first officer who is almost as cool as Wesley Crusher?
Will. It's so fun. It's just, he's. I mean, I really like. I come into our record sessions with so much confidence. You know, when I'm against him, I get spring in my step, my chest goes out a little more, I just become uber confident. It's fun to play that. Also, I mean, it's a fun character to play because while he's very dedicated to Starfleet, he's offensive, and we really try to, you know, get through the world without offending anyone these days. And so it's sort of fun to come into a recording studio and get the green light to be just a little bit of fun.
Jillian, fans have latched onto your character's hilarious grouchiness. Your character is very similar to Bones or even Pulaski on Next Generation. I understand that some fans are calling her Pulaski, which I think is adorable. How much fun are you having playing that particular side of this Cation doctor?
I am naturally a rage-filled, angry, bitter person. So it has been a wonderful conduit to let it come out in this Pulaski / Dr. Tana / Bones-like character. Let me say, secondly, I also think she's got a heart of gold, as angry and bitter and what I will become when I move to Maine in 5 years. I feel like this is a person who she puts her money where her mouth is. Like, she really loves what she does. And sure, she's angry and a little bit mean, but that's only because she wants everyone to do it or get it done the right way. She's saving lives, for F's sake. Mm-hmm.
Control Room is telling me that we have an unannounced guest arriving right now. I hope that you will all join me in welcoming a man who loves to show up at the last minute, in the final episode, to get us all across the finish line. Please welcome my friend, my colleague, Jonathan Frakes.
Yes!
He's here in the Ready Room.
Yes!
To spend a little bit of time with us today. Hi, Johnny.
WW. Look at Jerry. Jack.
Jack, are you okay? Are you feeling all right?
I'm out so hard right now.
That was a good surprise. Normally, wow. Like, good. You know, marketing surprises are stupid. This was great.
This is a good one.
Great.
Listen, a riot.
I was 100%
on your Zoom meeting for an hour.
You were there the whole time? We would have sped it up if we knew there was a treat coming.
No, it was a blast to not have to say anything stupid.
Johnny, I don't know if you are aware of this, but now that you have appeared on Lower Decks, you have maintained and extended your record for appearing in more Star Trek series than anyone else. And we're not even talking about Thomas Riker. This is just William Riker. I would love it. Would you please talk about reprising your role as Riker for Lower Decks and how this guest spot with you and Marina showed up and how that came about?
Mike McMahon made it happen. We're at a sushi bar in Toronto. He asked me if I wanted to be on the show. I said, of course I wanted to be on the show. And then when I got to go into the studio, he encouraged me to do what I wanted to do for 35 years, which was let Riker be a wild, insane character. So it's like, you know who I am.
I do.
Riker's a lot more serious. Mm-hmm. So this has been a blast. And Jack Quaid, you didn't even mention to me that you knew this was happening.
Yes, I did. Oh, wait, no, the show? No, you knew before I knew. That's the thing. I met you at a convention with our good friend Carl Urban. And
we ate oysters.
We ate oysters. It was great. And I was like, hey, I'm like such a big fan. It's so great to meet you. I'm actually on a Star Trek show that hasn't come out yet. And you were like, oh, yeah, you come to work with me on my ship. And I flipped out because that was the first time I had heard about that.
Frakes, you spoiler machine. Unbelievable.
Mike,
sure.
When you were working on TNG season 8, did you ever, in your wildest dreams, imagine that you would write for the actual William Riker on an actual Star Trek show?
No, I didn't. I mean, of course not. No, I mean, my cat is named Riker. You don't name your cat after somebody that is you think you're ever going to get to actually work with in real life. That's like aspirational stuff right there. You guys are very similar, by the way. I'll put you guys together in a room sometime. But not only did I never think I wrote a whole book where in it I kept going, listen, they're never going to let me write a Star Trek show, so at least I'm doing this. And my only interaction with Jonathan before I met him when he was directing an episode of Discovery while I was in Toronto on set for my short track, is I saw him at LAX once, and he was
I think he was like in line to check a bag or something. And I said to my wife, oh my God, that's Jonathan Frakes over there. And she's like, are you going to go say hi? What are you going to do? And I'm like, no, watch this. Hey, Frakes! And then I just hid. And he kind of like looked around and I was like,
what?
She's like, what are you doing? And I was like, I don't want to do anything else. I'm too scared. And we just ran up.
You ding dong ditched Jonathan Frakes?
an airport where you famously shouldn't be doing anything stupid. It was a joy. And like Riker on Lower Decks is like Lower Decks is an enhancement of things that already existed in Star Trek. You know, like it's something that was always there, but we just kind of exaggerated a little bit. And our Riker is he's the Riker who is expressing joy all the time, loves jazz all the time, is having a great time, you know, is truly in love with Deanna, and they have a great relationship and they're on a ship together. And we just wanted to imply this whole era of kind of post-Nemesis, the movie, not the relationship, the post-Nemesis like joy that they had being on the Titan and their own ship. And Jonathan came in and it was a party. Like recording him was like, it was as much fun as you can have recording for an animated show. And he was so game. He just got it. Like he's played this character for so long that to then shift into a comedic version of it that still remained true, like blew us away. So Jonathan, thank you again for reprising your role.
Mike, I'm going to give you the last question and give you the last word. Is there anything you can tell us? Anything you wish to leave us with as you and the room look ahead to season two?
Yes. I don't want to spoil anything, but I will say that we had a blast first season, and I think first seasons are hard, but it was a party for us. It was like a hard, awesome party. I don't know what that is in real life, a hard party, but I feel like Jerry knows what a hard party is. But the...
Yeah, man.
Second season is we learned a lot first. Yeah. What we knew is we love these characters. So right off the bat, we were like, you know, let's get Mariner and Tendi in a story. Like, what does that look like? And let's Boimler's on the Titan. You know, we don't undo that. Like we start the season, Boimler is on the Titan and you'll be seeing,
Jonathan, we're working together, man.
You'll be seeing Riker again at the beginning of next season for sure. So the only other thing about season two I want to say is that it's even bigger and it's even funnier and it's still very Star Trek. So I can't wait for you guys to see it. And thank you not only to all the fans who have been watching the show and who are so amazing and everybody who this brings a little joy to, like it's bringing a lot of joy to us too. And we're so happy to make it. But, you know, just to echo everybody else, you know, Will and Jonathan and everybody at CBS, like we're very proud and we're very careful. Like, it is amazing to be a part of Star Trek and it is mind blowing. But right now I think I can speak for everybody is we know that it's bigger than us and that we have to be really careful with it. And we want it to be really funny and good and surprising. So, you know, we're working really hard to make something really special for everybody. And it's just amazing to be involved in all of it. So thank you everybody so much, you know.
That's fantastic. Congratulations on a sensational season one. Everyone, stay safe, stay healthy, and I'll see you in the future.
Bye.
Hi, everybody. Bye. Miss all of you.
So good to see you guys.
Breaks.
That was great, you guys. That was great. And I didn't even have to see it to know that. I just know that it was awesome. So good job, everyone.
Which Star Trek scientist pioneered the development of the Exocomp? Was it A, Dr. Farallon, B, Dr. Ira Graves, C, Professor Tolan Wren, or D, Dr. April Wade? Don't boldly go anywhere. Stay tuned for the answer. If you thought the adventures of the USS Cerritos were over, think again. Star Trek Lower Decks Season 2 is already confirmed and well into production. I am crazy about the show, and I cannot wait to see what's next for our beloved Lower Deckers. I suspect you have a similar feeling. Well, I am here with good news for all of us. We have Mike McMahon on standby to give us a little update on what to expect on the next season of Lower Decks. Mike, you have the con.
Hey, everyone. Mike McMahon here. Before we close up the Ready Room, I just wanted to say that there is more Lower Decks on the way. We have way more adventures and way more stories to tell. You are going to be able to see what it's like to be on the Cerritos. when the secret is out. Everybody knows that Mariner and her mom are mother-daughter.
You, on the other hand, you see a problem, you can solve it.
Wait, are you saying work together for a change?
Might be useful to have a captain on your side, you know, instead of up your ass. What do you say?
We have a new head of security I'm excited for you to see because we've lost poor Shax.
We'll never forget Lieutenant Shax's sacrifice. He's with the prophets now.
What is Rutherford like now that his memories are messed up?
You know what this means, right? We get to become best friends all over again!
Okie dokie.
And I think the craziest thing is, what is Boimler's life like on the Titan?
I cannot believe that you took a promotion to the mother Titan!
You know, we have a lot more stories to tell, and it's always a good time on the USS Cerritos. So please join us again when we're back for next season.
Which Star Trek scientist pioneered the development of the Exocomp? Was it Dr. Farallon, Dr. Ira Graves, Professor Tolan Wren, or Dr. April Wade? And the answer is A, Dr. Farallon. Farallon and the Exocomp made their television debut in the Star Trek The Next Generation episode, The Quality of Life. Thank you all so much for joining us here today in the Ready Room. I know that I have had a blast getting to share all this amazing and hilarious Lower Decks stuff with y'all, and I cannot wait for season two. But the fun is not over yet, because we have Star Trek Discovery season three coming your way in just 1 week. On Thursday, October 15th. And this is the coolest thing ever. I am thrilled to say I will be back after each new episode to talk about it in the Ready Room. So I did a little math, and that works out to 13 new Star Trek episodes and 13 new Ready Rooms. I am so excited. It's gonna be awesome. Until then, I'm Will Wheaton. Live long and prosper.